Okay, podcast them soft, Mimi, the automation interviews continue with the man responsible in his debut feature, Jaro Setian, debut feature, my friend. But you've been very busy. You have been in and around film for a while. You used to cut trailers.
Oh, I still do, actually.
You still do cut trailers.
My company, Hungry Monster Entertainment, which produced Automation, right. It's been a trailer company for quite some time.
And, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I specialize mainly in horror movies.
Oh, okay. What's some of the big trailers
you've done? But we do everything.
What's some of the big trailers you've done?
Well, I worked at Lionsgate for over 16 years, so right. I've been... you know, nominated for over 25 Golden Trailer Awards.
That's
over
fantastic.
The years. I've been nominated for all sorts of different categories, including most original trailer, which was for a movie with Ryan Reynolds called The Voices.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw that. It was a comedy horror movie.
Yeah.
I also nominated for Best Thriller for a movie called Emily, which was an evil babysitter movie. It was quite good.
Yeah.
Best Horror Movie trailer. I got nominated for a movie called The Hatred, which was a very... very scary trailer. all sorts of stuff. And, you know, I worked on things like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger stuff like The Last Stand, or I did the new Blu-ray trailer for Terminator 2 and things like The Expendables or The Escape Plan movies. I did TV spots for Escape Plan with Stallone.
Right.
You know,
well,
second one.
I mean, we all know the importance of a good trailer. Let's face it. Trailers, people have paid for trailers. People have paid to see trailers and then left.
Yeah.
They've been that good.
Nah.
So what, I mean, how did you, tell us a little bit about how you got into that. How did all that come
about? Well, I was always into movie trailers. I mean, growing up, I would make VHS tapes of like whenever movies went on the VHSs, they'd have like one or two trailers at the beginning of them. So I'd set up two video cassette recorders and I'd copy the trailers from one deck to another. And I ended up having like 15 2-hour tapes just loaded with movie trailers over time, because I just studied them and just loved them, you know.
Right.
And then, you know, I did them for a few friends, independent films. And then I I saw an ad in Variety. They used to, of course, way back, you know, look for people through, Variety, you know, with little, you know, ads, and it was for Artisan Entertainment, and they needed a trailer editor, and I applied, and I thought I was going to get the job, but it didn't happen right away. I ended up working in TV promos, like editing things like Judge Judy and X-Files, you know, promos, that 70s show, and then I got called in again to Artisan almost like 8 months later, 8 or 9 months later, and they offered me the job. So I took it, and I just had been in that building ever since, because like a year later, Lionsgate bought Artisan, and they pretty much fired everyone that brought me in, but they just left me and one producer left. We were the only two people on the floor left. It was like around Christmas time. Everyone got let go. So we were just sitting there on the last day. So, like, you know, we were never called into the room to be let go. So we just, you know, we were told, well, just keep coming to work. You know what I mean? And we did. And that's what happened. I was with Lionsgate for the next, you know, 15 years.
Wow, there you go. Fantastic. So let's talk about automation. Now, I've talked to Rolf Konevsky, who was part of the writing of the script. Where did the idea come from, and how did it develop and eventually lead to the making of the film?
Well, I got to say, Rolf's a terrific guy and a wonderful collaborator. You know, we both, you know, we've known each other for a while, because I actually did a trailer for a movie of his a long time ago called One in the Gun. And, like, we just knew each other socially, because we're all in the same circles in the L.A. horror community.
Right.
What ended up, you know, we both competed in horror trivia.
Right.
And we're on different teams. But, like, I basically, you know, had a couple projects that just didn't happen, you know, I was hoping would happen, but never did.
Right.
And I was in a situation where I was just, you know, we just went through a big disappointment of another project falling through. And
right.
I just decided to work with what I have, you know,
right.
And one of my friends, Ted Smith, who is a prop builder, had all these cool sci-fi props, you know, guns and computer consoles, and he had a robot from the project that never got finished or never actually went into production. So he was like, hey, you know, if you want to use any of this stuff, you can. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, well, I got a robot. I got, you know, computer consoles and things. I had a cousin who has a company called Alert Insulation. It's an insulation company in La Puente. And, you know, he said I could film there, so I had that. Yeah. Alyssa Dowling, a friend, I've known her for many years, and she helped out on another project in the past. So, you know, I talked to her about potentially doing this, and, you know, she was interested, so I knew I'd have her for the role, you know, so I wrote the lead role specifically for her.
Yeah,
sure. I knew my wife was going to have a part in it. So I basically was writing everything around, I was making an outline based on what I had, you okay. know, and right. And this idea of robots in the workplace was sort of the principal idea. And me and I told Rolf about it after trivia one day, and he was like, hey, you know, he started to offer some really good advice, and you know, because originally it was going to be like 8 robots, and we were just going to clone the robot. And he's like, no, 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 you should do it with just 1 robot. So we talked it over, and we worked it out, and he ended up writing the script with, like writing a treatment with me.
Right.
And then I brought in, I started writing the script after that. And then I brought in another writer friend of mine who I used to work with at an ad agency. His name's Matt Schaefer, and he finished the screenplay. And then the two of us, then we had Rolf look at it one more time, and Rolf did a rewrite, a final rewrite, very quickly too. And, you know, it really all came together. I mean, I kept rewriting it even while we were working on the movie itself.
Sure.
But again, this was like not one of those things where it was like, hey, this is my dream project. I just can't wait to, you know, write this. Yeah. It was just, what can I do? You know?
Yeah,
and
sure.
It was really dealing with so many things that are personal to me that I love, you know? I mean, I've worked in corporate, you know, and I've, and I love movies where there's, not real characters, but you give them life, you know? And, and the other great thing I knew I was going to get was, Jim Tasker, who did the voice in a lot of my trailers. And
right.
I knew when we were filming, I'm going to have Jim Tasker do the voice of this robot.
Right. Sure.
And I think it really was magical. It just was perfect, you know?
Yeah. Well, I spoke to Jeff Knight, the man in the suit, yesterday, and Sadie.
Oh, he was so good.
Yeah, he was a really nice bloke to talk to. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, coming from editing, now some of the best lessons I learned about filmmaking in general was from an editor, because editors essentially make the film that we see, right?
Yep.
In the essence that the sequence of images that we see is cut together by the editor. Fair enough, you go out and you get the footage and you write the script and all that sort of stuff. But the film that we see and the way that we see it is the responsibility of the editors and sound editors and all that sort of thing. So coming from a predominantly editing into directing, how did your background and editing influence your directorial decision?
It was huge because... Every scene we were filming, I was always kind of already cutting it together in my head.
Right.
You know, I knew what footage, because we didn't have a lot of time. I mean, you know, we actually had a lot of pieces to juggle on this movie and not much of a budget and not a lot of days to shoot. So, you know, I really had to minimize what we were going to be filming and make sure we had what we needed to tell our story in a coherent way.
Yeah.
The area where it really came in handy, especially, was when we did our pickups. Because I knew, you know, towards the end of our shoot, you know, we didn't have everything we needed, you know, or at least enough to make it as satisfying of a movie I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
So I just set aside, okay, well, I'll just cut what I have. I'll put some holes in the edit where, you know, we'll just slate it and just say, this is what we're going to do later. And then we'll come back and do the pickups.
Right, right.
So 6 months after the shoot was done, I had an edit of the movie on my laptop and I would be able to show the actors, hey, this is, you know, here's the scene just before the hole that we have to fill. And they'd see the scene and then they'd see the part that, you know, then I'd say, okay, now we're going to film this and this is going to fit in right in between these two parts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they always knew where they were supposed to be, how it would, you know, it really helped smooth it out because, you know, I mean, I really just tried to, you know, make an efficient movie that kind of told its story in an interesting way and, you know, I understand that a lot of low-budget movies, you can get bored quick, or, you know, and it was really important to me to keep things moving and interesting, even when the robot wasn't on screen, you know
sure,
what I mean?
Sure, sure. Well, there's the, you know, the corporate intrigue and, you know, ulterior motives and all that sort of stuff, which is always very interesting and very, very common in the corporate sector, you know? Corporate,
oh, yeah.
Everyone's got an agenda. The comparisons have been made with Short Circuit and Chopping Mall and RoboCop and all those kinds of things linked to this. I personally got out of it a more of a link to Fritz Lang's Metropolis in the aspect that, for those listening, and of course you've probably seen Metropolis too, but the way that Maria the construct is infused with the beauty of the real Maria, and then the way that she is used by the populace, which kind of bleeds into the question, do you think we're really ready for an AI or a robot with the intricacies of human emotion?
Well, that is the big question, isn't it? You know, I mean, to me, I didn't go into the movie with necessarily an answer to any of these questions.
Sure,
I like kind of just putting it out there a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, look, I mean, automation has done a lot of good things.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to sit here and deny that there's usefulness in it.
Mm.
But there's definitely also an element of angst in the idea that, wait, are you going to automate everything? Even my job, too? You know?
Right, sure.
And really, one of the motivating factors behind the movie was I thought it was a funny idea if the robot later on finds out he's about to be replaced, and if the robot is given, you know, fake emotions, because they talk about this a lot with artificial intelligence, how they want to give them the ability to work with people better and understand people's emotions, like that they are training AI to pick up on how people react to them so that the robots can react a certain way back at them. Like, so if someone's upset or happy, or they want the robot to engage with them where they are, you know? And that's, you know, it's basically an artificial emotions. And, you know, my idea was, okay, so now the robot has the emotions, they're artificial, but what happens when he finds out he's obsolete? Is he going to react in a negative way like a person would, you know? Who would be upset over losing their purpose? I mean, there's a lot of pride in having a job and a title and things like that. And to have it taken away and be seen as obsolete is a hurtful and awful thing, you know?
Right.
And, I also
saw ties in this film to, I mean, any film that deals with robots is going to be inevitable links to other films, but I saw a lot, I mean, obviously because of the nature of the genre, they connect Chopping Mall and Short Circuit, but I also saw links to, like, AI and Bicentennial Man, you know, the idea of a robot that is evolving the same way as a person does. It falls in love, it's confused, it's lied to. You know, I think probably the truly inevitable danger is when we put that kind of thinking inside a machine, what happens when you piss it off?
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
You know, you get
yeah.
You get Skynet, evidently. But
but you know, and it's funny though, you know, I remember there were a couple of reviews that were like, well, this movie seems a little confused, like, you know, what is, and it's like, you know, it's, you know, and again, you know, we got a lot of nice reviews, so I'm not trying to, you know,
I'm
not that defensive about it, but it's just, it's, you know, it is what it is, but it's just funny to me that sometimes people say that, and it's like, because this film was designed to be exactly what it is. I mean, you know, I want people to feel sympathy for Otto. There was nothing confusing about that. I want you to like Otto, you know, throughout this movie, and, you know, when he's going bad, so to speak, he's malfunctioning, you know, it's not his fault, you know, I mean, it's just happening, you know, and
we all have bad days,
you know, it's,
and this one's his.
Hmm?
I said, we all have bad days, and this one's his.
You know, and, you know, again, it's not his fault for why his behavior is, you know, be going that way. I mean, there's a lot of things that occur in the movie that aren't, you know, something he probably would have chosen to do, but you know, he does start making choices later that are not good, you know, but he doesn't know any better at first, you know, and
totally.
You know, there's that sort of conflict, and also we really wanted to set the movie up, set the table, make you like the characters, create a sense of sort of fun and stuff in the first half before it kind of, you know, changes tone, you know, in the later part, you know.
Sure.
But even there, we've tried to keep some humor throughout and, you know, just make it a fun experience for 90 minutes, not just, you know, something where you're just fast-forwarding to kills or a robot or something, you know what I mean?
So has the experience made you want to jump in the director's chair again as soon as possible?
Oh yeah. No, I've got two potential things sort of in the projects in the fire right now, and we'll see what happens. I mean, one's a considerably bigger film, the other one's a smaller one, and we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, but I'm just trying to keep going. I mean, you know, right now, as far as the editing goes, I just, you know, edit for my company, Hungry Monster Entertainment. I still do lots of trailers. I just did a trailer, actually, for what was probably one of the biggest movies this summer in theaters, which was The Wretched.
So, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was a wonderful movie.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hope it goes well for you. Do you think, I mean, a lot of directors, well, not all of them, but some of them tend to stay with a few smaller projects before they go up to a bigger level. I mean, given the choice, are you anxious to stretch further?
I'd love to do something larger, obviously. You know, money definitely buys you, you know, more time, which is probably the most important thing when you're making a movie. But yeah, you know, if I'm doing more films like this, that's just fine too, you know.
Cool.
One other thing that's really satisfying about the automation movie was, you know, it's basically, it's 100% the way I wanted it to be in the end. The only limitations on the movie were budgetary, really.
Right.
But as far as, there wasn't like an executive producer, you know, looking over my shoulder and saying, you can't do that, you got to change this. I mean, the team behind it, they just let me make my movie. And that was fantastic.
That's
incredible blessing.
That's still why independent films are probably the last great haven for original ideas, or at least the director's or the writer's interpretation of a genre or a particular story that they have fallen in love with. Because let's face it, the more millions you've got, the more cooks in the kitchen, the less it becomes your vision, true?
Absolutely. And, you know, we have a large bunch of producers on this movie. You know, we had Esther Goodstein and Dan Bowen and Robert Parigi, and then we had people like Mike Elliott, and, you know, they offered opinions, or, if I asked for something, you know, they were clearly there and, you know, offered suggestions, and there always be, you know, some talk on that stuff. So everyone did contribute, you know, it wasn't, but there was no one strong-arming me and saying, you got to do this or do that. So I had that sort of creative freedom. It was ultimately, you know, the movie I wanted it to be, and that's what made it a wonderful experience. I mean, it was definitely a lot of work, because at the time we were making this movie, I was working full-time at Lionsgate, so I would, be coming home from work and sitting down and editing again, you know, which is crazy.
Well, it's a labor of love that's paid off in spades, is automation. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie, a worthy insert into the great Robots Gone Wrong sort of film. But it's been fabulous to talk to you this morning, Garo. I wish all the films and all of the things that you have going all turn out well, and I look forward to seeing the next Garo Setian feature. Should be really good.
Oh, thank you so much, Kent. We really loved it was an absolute pleasure getting a chance to speak to you, and I know you're getting a chance to speak to some others, and I think that's great. I mean, we had an amazing team. We had, you know, Sadie Katz and Perry Shen and all these great, wonderful actors, and very happy with the end result. So thank you so much.
Before I let you go, you wake up tomorrow and your consciousness, everything you know, everything that you are, is still the same, but you wake up and your consciousness, all that you are as of right now, is inside a robot body. What do you do?
Oh my gosh. You just wake up and it's just happened?
Mm-hmm. You just wake up that way.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I think I'd be having to check myself out in the mirror to see how much of me is left first, you know?
Right.
Then it's like, my other first question is to find someone and say, what the hell happened? Why am I in a robot?
Honey, I think I had allergic reaction to the shellfish again.
Yeah, I know. You wonder, will that day come where we just put our brains in robot bodies and everyone's walking around like, you know,
yeah.
What was that movie, Replicants with Bruce Willis? You know?
Oh, yeah, no. What was it? Surrogates. Was it Surrogates? I think it was Surrogates.
Surrogates, that yeah. was it. Yeah, Surrogates.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. Yeah. That'd be interesting, you know. But, I mean, of course, the downside of it is, like, in WALL-E, too, you know, how all the people were, like, on floating beds at the end and things.
Yeah.
We suffer. I think eventually, if it gets too, if technology gets too good, that's how humanity will suffer. It won't be because it goes bad, goes Skynet style. I think it'll be because it goes that way, where we are all the more isolated, even more than we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you can operate a machine that is like in Surrogates, which is like the idealized version of yourself, and send it out to do, or you go out in that, it's sort of like your car. Instead of going to work, you go out in your robot kind of thing.
So. Yeah.
But you know, as cool as the concept is, I personally don't think health-wise, sort of mental health and obviously physical health wouldn't be very good for mankind. But I'll tell you what's good for mankind is automation. Please check it out, Garo. Do you want to tell where everyone can go and see it right now?
Well, right now it's on Amazon Prime, and it's on, I believe, Tubi, and I think there's a link you can post that shows all the different places it's available, and there's a Blu-ray available, and the Blu-ray is wonderful because we put over like 2.5 hours of special features on there and shows you how we made the movie, and there's interviews with everyone. There's interviews with my wife, Anahi, and Sarah French, and Sadie Katz, and Graham Skipper, and Jeff Knight, and Alyssa Dowling. I mean, all of them are on there, and you know, really, we had a time making it.
That's fantastic.
You
I love
see all of it.
I'm a huge extra features fan, so I'll definitely be checking that one out. Automation, ladies and gentlemen, check it out. Where the director told you to. It's a great addition to the robots having a bad day, which a lot of characters fall into that. The Terminator had a bad day, and RoboCop had a bad day. Auto is learning to be human, but in the middle of it, he has a bad day. It's automation. It's Garo Setian. Thank you once again for being my guest on Podcasting Them Softly.
Thank you so much, Kent. Really appreciate it.